This podcast is for informational purposes only. We are not medical professionals and do not provide medical advice. Consult a healthcare provider for any health concerns. Opinions expressed are not a substitute for professional medical guidance.
This edition of the Optimize We podcast is brought to you by the Biohacking Index. Visit biohackingindex.com for ratings and reviews of your favorite wellness solutions and wellness providers. Hello and welcome to the Optimize We podcast, where we share biohacking truths and no BS. Today, I am joined by the amazing clinician who is also an incredible inventor of a groundbreaking technology that I can't wait to talk about, Trevor Kolm. Thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast. So welcome.
Thank you. What an honor to be here. I'm fired up.
Well, you are based out of Austin.
Correct, yes.
And you are a chiropractor with 10 years of clinical experience. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. I just stopped practicing about 4 or 5 months ago, so I'm doing the tech thing full time. But yeah, 10 years under my belt.
Wow. And this tech that you've created, now I've experienced the other side of this technology. So I have a child who, when she was born, they didn't really know what was going on with her. And so they put her through an EEG when she was about like 4 or 5 years old. But tell me a little bit about how you got to create Cortex Brain.
I was playing lacrosse, and in my last year of school, I suffered a major concussion where I had to drop out of school. My short-term memory was gone. Like I could meet somebody, and within 5 seconds of hearing their name, it would no idea what their name was.
Really?
Yeah, it was really bad. And so, you know, this went on for months, you know, couldn't exercise, couldn't be around bright lights. You know, the doctors were like, basically be a couch potato and just wait until this heals up. And at the time I was going to this like really specialized concussion facility in Canada that a famous hockey player who had to retire early from concussions, you know, he donated a lot of money to our school to really get us, you know, start finding out how we could start helping concussions. So I was under really good care at the time. And like I said, nothing was improving for like months. And, you know, I started after a while, started thinking like, man, is this going to be the rest of my life? Like, am I ever going to be able to have like a normal job, a normal life? And so, you know, naturally that depression starts sinking in. And then one day a friend of mine is like, you should go see a chiropractor. And I was like, a chiropractor for my brain? Don't they like pop your back when it hurts? And he's like, yeah, just go talk to this guy. And I had no other option. So I was like, okay, cool. And this chiropractor, he just explained to me very simply, like, hey, your brain and body kind of communicate through, you know, your nervous system, which passes through your spine. And if there's any blockages in that, the communication between the brain and body is kind of cut off and your body can't heal. And I think my jaw hit the floor. I was like, why isn't every doctor doing this? Like, this just makes so much sense. Right. It just kind of like spoke to my soul, you know? And the first adjustment, it was like instantly that brain fog lifted. You know, the next day it was like, holy, I am like significantly better already. Within a few weeks, my memory was fully back. I was going through you have to get like your bus license or for driving a fire truck. And there was like this 17-point inspection. And so I had to like memorize all these things to check on, like an inspection before you get in the bus. And I was able to do it. I was like, holy, like my brain is working better now than it was before the concussion. Wow. And it changed my life so profoundly. Like beyond just the concussion symptoms resolving, it was like an awakening. I started making better choices for myself. I started, you know, like my intuition came online. You know, going from like a jock and kind of like that toxic masculine world to, you know, just becoming more in tune with myself. And, you know, my life took a total 180, and so much so that I decided to become a chiropractor. It really, you know, I went through school seeing it through the lens of this changes the brain. And all of the research now is actually showing that, yes, this chiropractic adjustments, when done correctly, they like dramatically change brain function. And yet, as a chiropractor practicing for 10 years, I didn't have any tools to show this to my patients, right? And I really believe the biggest problem within the chiropractic profession is that there is this huge gap between the actual value that we provide as clinicians and the public's perception of that value, right? A lot of people think we're just these like second-rate backcrackers or, you know, second-rate medical doctors who crack backs. It's like pseudoscience, but it's actually like really grounded in science, but we've never had a tool to be able to validate that or prove to people what we're doing. And so in my private practice, like I'd see just from adjusting a spine, I started seeing like diabetes reverse, fibromyalgia reverse,
wow,
lupus, people with these like weird labs, like the various biomarkers in their labs would be like not making sense at all. And we'd adjust their spine and all of a sudden their labs would normalize. And so I was like, we need some kind of a technology to actually understand what we're doing and to be able to communicate it to our patients and like really show the value of what we're doing, because this is a very powerful healing modality. Like really, chiropractic is like a badass biohacking tool, right? But it often gets lumped into this sort of like neck pain, back pain, and headaches categories.
A lot of like weird body workers out there that are probably, you know, spoiling the one bad apple usually spoils the bunch, and you only hear the bad stuff, right? Because our brains are not meant to make us happy. They're meant to keep us safe. So our intuition is really what should be guiding us. And you've created a technology that helps guide that intuition with real science and real data. So tell us a little bit about, you know, this EEG machine, because my experience with it is I had to have I think she was 5 or 6 at the time, sit still for a prolonged period of time. They're like, if you could get her to fall asleep, I'm like, you just gave her a bag of goldfish, a lollipop, and then you expect me to get her to somehow fall asleep on this table. And I did actually end up, I sang her to sleep. And I don't know how this worked, but she had all these leads all over her head that were kind of like glued into her hair with this stuff. And she had to be asleep for 15 to 30 minutes, not moving, breathing, but not moving. And for a young kid, that's really hard to do, especially after they've just given her a bunch of sweet treats and junk food. So tell me a little bit about how you went from, you know, getting people into alignment, getting all of their energy pathways, helping them heal by opening up all of those blockages, to now this EEG machine, which is transforming the whole way that we look at this stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, in private practice, where like there's no tools to actually like understand what we're doing and show people. But also for me as a clinician, like the amount of force we put into someone's body when we make an adjustment, like that matters. I would have patients who were, they were like, you know, severe PTSD, right? And even just like I used an instrument to adjust, so it delivers a little tap. And even sometimes that would be too much for them. And unfortunately, sometimes you have to kind of like mess somebody up first before you find that limit, right? And so okay. I wanted a tool that would also
break them down before you can build them back up, right?
Well, it's like surpassing what their brain can handle, right? So you're kind of pushing them over the red line, and you don't want to do that. It's not ideal for healing. And so, you know, it was like, hey, I need to show my patients what we're doing and like communicate the value, and also like have a tool for me to understand what I'm doing, like ideally in real time. And so, like you said about your daughter, like EEG sucks. It just does, you know. It's been around forever. You know, it takes forever to set it up. You have often, you're going to put all that goop and the glue in the hair, and it's just, it's messy. It has a lot of untapped potential is kind of how I saw it. And I think to really measure the brain, I do think it is the best technology. Just in the way we go about it need to change. And so now I kind of identify, go ahead.
With EEG, so my daughter, the intention of what we were using it for my daughter was actually to measure her brain connectivity to her muscles, because her muscles weren't functioning properly. And it wasn't just her fine motor muscles. It was the internal muscles, like her digestive function just wasn't working properly. Her, you know, her core was not firing, and she had chronic fatigue. You know, as a 5-year-old, you expect them to be running around the house, the backyard, like their bundas are on fire. You don't expect them to be kind of fatigued after walking up a flight of stairs. So that was the intention of the EEG, was to diagnose the connection between the brain and the muscles. Now, it can be used for a lot of other things as well, right? So,
for sure. Yeah.
What are all of the use cases for EEG?
Well, I think because of the issues, like with it being the setup time being, you know, you're basically doing a full-blown science experiment every time you measure someone's brain. I think that in part has really limited its use case, right? So primarily it's been used for seizure detection from a medical standpoint, primarily seizure detection, a little bit of like stroke diagnosis, analysis, and then like things like what your daughter went through, right? But I think the brain, obviously, it's the master system, right? It controls every other part of the body. And so in theory, we should be able to look at brain waves and understand almost anything that's going on in the body. So I think, yeah, the potential of it is like really untapped. And the way I kind of approached it was like, hey, we got to solve this setup time and make it like super simple. So with Cortex, we applied robotics and we're able to set the headset up in 3 seconds. Whereas traditional EEG can be like 20 to 60 minutes just to set it up.
It took almost the full hour for my daughter because of just trying to find the right placement of every node. And, you know, they have to keep going back and looking at the screen and making sure that they're measuring everything properly. And then again, she had to sit completely still, which, you know, think about doing this on a baby.
I do think medical EEG, like in the traditional sense, it hasn't really evolved much at all, except that it's now digitized. There are a lot of like consumer EEG devices now for like meditation, things like that. And you can actually use AI algorithms to filter out a lot of the noise. So, you know, the first thing you kind of look at with EEG is removing artifacts. So like when you blink, there's a specific signature that happens in the brain. Like you can see it creates noise. And so filtering out, you know, small amounts of movement. So that's a huge part of Cortex as well, as being able to like, it may get to a point where you could like embed it in a football helmet during a football game. Right. But I don't think it's fully there yet. I think, you know, we're just starting to filter out to where you can do like some gentle walking with the headset on and see, you know, still get clean brainwave data to where, you know, when you're doing this on a kid, they don't have to be super still. They can still kind of be a kid. The data you need from the brainwaves.
I mean, with AI and with all, if you think about like just editing this podcast episode, you know, our producers will take out, my husband's actually downstairs packing up our house. We're moving next week. And muting myself because I'm like, oh, he, you know, he's a fireman. He's not necessarily like the quietest of humans, and he's making a lot of noise in the background. And that's all going to be edited out. So you can edit out also like the noise that you're getting from this feedback from this robotic EEG machine that you've created, which is very cool. And are you using a lot of AI in order to do a lot of the editing and fine tuning of the data?
So we're looking at using brain waves and creating like predictive care plans to where the AI can predict the like what would be the perfect care plan for this patient. And that applies directly to like biohacking too, right? Like when we met at the biohacking conference in Austin, and, you know, walking through the trade show booths, it's like, there's a lot of stuff and there's a lot of, you know, people make claims and it's like, how do you validate that? And, you know, some of it I'm sure is great. And some of it probably is, you know, kind of like snake oil. And having some way of determining like what really works and like when should you use that specific tool, right? Like hyperbaric is great, but does everyone need it all the time? Like once a day, twice a day, like, you know, being able to fine tune what treatments, modalities, biohacking tools, whatever you want to call it, like being able to fine tune that specific to that person and particularly in real time is really the focus of what we're trying to do. So I think that's how we're going to solve a lot of this healthcare crisis we're in this country.
And I applaud you for creating something that's not so linear. Like I can absolutely see the use case for chiropractors. And I think, there's what, 70,000 chiropractors in the United States, maybe 100,000 in the world.
Yeah, about that.
And so, I mean, I think every single chiropractor will want to use this device, but then bringing it beyond the practical use case that you originally ideated this for to validation of other biohacking methodologies is really going to be very, very important. There's a lot of EEG machines, not EEG, HRV machines. And you can even wear the rings and you can wear the watches and you can, you know, I think they have an earring that's coming out soon, like a little cuff on your ear to measure your heart rate variability. But being able to actually measure your brain and all the output that your brain is constantly putting out, you know, thousands of signals per second, and tie that back to an actual care plan for people and the efficacy around all of these modalities. I mean, I'm doing my best with the Biohacking Index to get like unbiased ratings and reviews and clinical efficacy from all of these doctors, because we have a panel of over 110,000 doctors within the United States. A lot of them are chiropractors, and that's great to have that sort of anecdotal case study verification. But what's to prevent someone from giving a great rating and review to something that is really a placebo effect, right? Like a, you know, a quantum energy device or a, I've seen all sorts of things at these conferences, like really weird springs that like completely change your energetic aura. And a lot of the stuff I actually subscribe to, and a lot of it, I'm like, okay, is that nonsense? Is that just someone trying to capitalize on this industry and on sick people and trying to sell a couple of products that are just like not real anything? So sure. I think it's going to be great to have that added layer of really efficacious data. So how are you ensuring that all of the data that's coming out of your device is actually clinically statistically significant?
Yeah, so we're building a really strong research team. So I really think of our company as, you know, we're kind of a hybrid, like, medical device company, like almost a private research company and a tech company, right? So we are building like the research component is super important to us, and bringing in like the greatest minds to the company who can validate the data. I mean, you know, I'm a practicing chiropractor, was a practicing chiropractor, music major turned chiropractor, you know, like I know enough to be dangerous with the data. I can help steer it on a high level, but we need like really, really sharp neuroscientists, PhD, you know, biomedical electrical engineers, things like that. So we're building our team right now of people like that who can validate the data and really help us identify like what, you know, what is valuable data? Like what does it all mean, right? Because brainwaves they're complex, and it's not, even though it's been around for a long time, there's a lot that still has yet to be uncovered. And I think there's so much potential with it, right? Like we're not that far from, even with Cortex, being able to just order a pizza with your brainwaves, like set your intention and be able to order pizza, you know, like we're not that far from that. And it's, you know,
I'm always hungry, Trevor. This is not going to be for me. I'm going to be ordering everything to my house.
It's so, like, you know, I'm just throwing random ideas out there, right? But like that's all possible. And, you know, we're not that far away, but to get there, you really do need like a really strong team of like researchers and stuff to be a part of it. Because I don't think we're ever, at least I don't think in my lifetime, we'll fully understand the brain. Mm-hmm. I think we'll make significant progress. And I hope that Cortex is a huge part of that journey. I really do think it's a technology kind of for the people, right? It is sort of a heat seeking missile of truth. And, you know, we can look at, whether it be biohacking modalities, treatments, we can look at even conventional medicine, right? Like prescribing medication, it's, you know, for like psychiatric disorders, it's often just a shot in the dark, right? So like, try this pill, come back 6 weeks, let me know how it went. Like, oh, didn't work, try this one. But we should have AI be able to predict, like, what will this person benefit most from? You know, it has huge applications all across medicine to really, like, improve, ultimately, patient outcomes and improve human health and well-being. Because at the end of the day, you know, I really believe our survival on this planet as a species depends on us, you know, starting to thrive again. And I think Cortex has the potential to help really move the needle in that direction.
I 1,000% agree. Our health is rapidly becoming our wealth again, which is, it's great to see that we're getting back to basics. But then the people who own the data, you have a grave responsibility.
For sure.
Not only protect that data, but then share it within the right circles to have that uplift in health optimization. So how are you going to ensure that, are you just going to be sharing this back to a consortium of other doctors? Are you going to keep it contained within your own infrastructure? Are you going to have partners with other, you know, you talked about big pharma. To me, that's great, because I think that that will add a layer of efficacy that we don't even get from like FDA approval or any of like the pay to play organizations that are regulating our industry right now, or regulating the pharmaceutical industry, and eventually going to regulate sort of the functional medicine biohacking industry. So like, how are you going to navigate all of richness of the data that you have and that really important asset?
Yeah, for sure. I really do believe that, you know, data is kind of the new currency in the tech world. And I think brainwave data will be some of the most valuable data. And protecting that, you know, at all costs is really crucial. And so we do kind of operate with like sort of a sharing, data sharing, where the patient owns their data, the practicing chiropractor owns the data, and we do as well. So it's sort of a three-part sharing thing, right? We anonymize the data, so we don't know that like this is, you know, Betty Sue's brainwaves, but we know it's a 38-year-old female or whatever it might be, right? We protect it in that sense, and then the data we share will be like with the public or with clients or customers. From our perspective, will be, you know, the data becomes our marketing tool, right? So if we can show, hey, 80% of people doing biohacking tool X or getting this chiropractic approach or technique or this medication or whatever it might be, that, you know, they see this level of outcome. So we use the data to drive the marketing, right? We show with hard science that like, this is how this works. This is predictive. We expect to see these results or this ROI to the application. But yeah, it's super important that we keep that data safe. And at this point in time, we don't know what people's thoughts are off brainwaves, which is, you know, a question that I get often, but we might not be that far away from that day. Right. And so we don't want people's thoughts being just like let out, you know, that is something that needs to be kept sacred. So yeah, we take the cybersecurity component very seriously.
Well, and that's good. I mean, in terms of database warehousing, there's a lot that can be done, but it's a scary time that we live in, because there's not just hackers that are out there, but so much data is just innately kind of being leaked. And yeah, I don't want my thoughts being, I spend so much time trying to control my thoughts and not scream at my children all the time or scream at my husband all the time.
For sure.
No, I don't actually have to do that. But on the flip side, our intellectual property is now being kind of scraped. Think about all of that. I said it's deep fakes that are out. Literally use my voice, like call my grandma and say, hey, grandma, I'm stuck in a prison in Peru and you need to send me $100,000, you know, to this bank account right now. And little old grandma is going to be fooled into thinking that I'm actually in a prison in Peru. I don't know why she would think that, but I don't know what I did wrong to get to a person in Peru. But yeah, that is happening now, where the people at the highest level, you know, our people in government are being copycatted. And if our real thoughts and our, think about like just our safe as a country, if the thoughts of our military were now transferred over to our enemies, they'd know all of our strategy. They'd know all of the protections that we have in place, and they'd be able to wipe us out in a heartbeat. So it's very important data for you to keep under lots of redundant systems.
100%. Yes.
And that is the responsibility, but I also see a huge opportunity. You know, I was I worked in pharmaceutical advertising for many years of my career, and I could see the writing on the wall that our clinical research needed to be completely revamped and overhauled. And I was working with J Labs on a product that they were looking to launch, and they spent over $2 million getting two people signed up for their clinical trial. Now, two people are not going to be indicative of be able to be extrapolated out to make sense for the rest of the population. They had to do a lot more work. So they ended up spending, I think, tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to get this drug released. But with a technology like yours that's non-invasive, doesn't take a whole lot of time to get set up, and can also gather a lot of data without really intrusive interventions, right? You're just kind of putting a cap on your head, and then you're getting a bunch of information within a matter of minutes.
Yeah, we've never had the ability to do this so quickly. And I should mention as well, like, so there are two main things we solved with Cortex. So the one was the setup time. And the second, so with traditional EEG, it's just raw waves. It's like a lie detector test that's been digitized, essentially, right? Just a bunch of waves all over the page. And there's a huge learning curve to be able to understand what that means, right? And very few doctors, medical doctors, can actually read and interpret EEG. And so often what happens is a recording is taken, and then they export that recording into, usually it's like a couple different softwares, and then it will kind of create a static report. And so we wanted to make this technology. I think brainwave, like EEG, I think has potential to be one of the best technologies in medicine, like period, in biohacking, alternative medicine, whatever you want to call it. And so we process the data in real time. So one of the things we do is we create a digital twin of the brain. So you're literally watching the electrical storm of the brain as it's happening. We process the data in multiple ways on this sort of futuristic dashboard. So you could almost think of it as it gives us the ability to tap into using a human being as a biosensor, right? So if we turn off your Wi-Fi and all of a sudden your brain goes into harmony, well, we now know that Wi-Fi is harmful to your brain. And maybe there's something we could do to alter the frequency that Wi-Fi transmits over, or, you know, some aspect of the way we do Wi-Fi to make it actually enhance human health rather than harm it. And that can be applied to almost anything in the modern world, right? We've just kind of arbitrarily built this world around us without any consideration how it affects human physiology. And so Cortex gives us the ability to actually assess like all of these things. Like I have this giant LED light blasting in the face right now, and I know that's not good for my health.
No.
Right? It's junk light. But can I prove that and validate it? No. But with Cortex, we'll be able to. And then we can create lights that are heart helpful, right? Like full spectrum or whatever it might be. And so I really do think like it gives us the ability beyond medicine and health, like to rethink the way the world has been built around us, to actually like build a world for humans, not just that we have to adapt to and live in, you know?
We've been doing that a lot over the course of 100 years. We've been doing a lot of adapting, and I mean, we've caused it ourselves. But I love the fact that you are also thinking about how this could be easy to understand and not just for the doctors, right? Do you think that maybe someday professional NFLers or even someone like me with kids who are ski racers and playing field hockey, and I've had two of my three kids that I gave birth to have had concussions. My bonus daughter, my stepdaughter, has a lot of injuries and hyperflexibility in her ankles and, you know, stuff going on with her hip. And it's like, you know, as a mom, I'd love to have this device in my house and I could see if any of these things that we're trying to help our daughters heel is actually working, you know, especially on my bionic husband, who has had probably over 24 surgeries and has a very dangerous job, as your dad did as a fireman. We are constantly like trying to figure out, okay, is it the peptides that's working? Is it the blue scorpion venom? Is it the PEMF? Is it the red light therapy? Is it the detox protocols that we're doing with infrared sauna? Is it, you know, the PEMA that's just, you can't even feel it? You know, what is actually making the difference? Is it the hyperbaric oxygen therapy? Is it meditation? Who knows? We're just kind of grasping at straws, but we have access to all of this stuff. You know, is it the combination of some of these modalities together? So do you think that, you know, you can get it into a biohacking mama's home, or are you thinking for right now is just about the doctors?
I think we're, even now, like, the learning curve is so short, because like, we had to solve the issue of most chiropractors have no more training in EEG than you do. And so, you know, we had to make it to where it's like, you know, you watch a couple videos on how to, you know, use the tech and like what the data means to kind of at least get you started. Yeah. So, I mean, I think we're pretty close even now to being in a place where, yeah, a biohacking mama could use something like this and start to understand, like, what is it doing? What is, you know, modality X doing to my child? And, you know, initially, it's going to be humans identifying some patterns, and that's going to help steer, you know, how do we apply the AI and sort of which directions are we going to head? And then eventually the AI will kind of, I hate to say take over, but like it will be able to do analysis at a much higher scale and faster and more accurately than we humans can. And it can eventually start predicting. Yeah, like you put it on, and it could be something as simple as like, you know, everything in tech is getting kind of miniaturized and simplified. And so I could see that within, you know, 5-10 years, you could have a home device that's maybe even just a single electrode that is able to tell you 80% of, you know, the things you would want to know about, like, how is hyperbaric or blue scorpion venom or whatever it might be affecting my child.
And I can't wait for that day. I always bump up against people who are terrified of AI, like the AI takeover. And what I tell them is, in 2011, I joined this company called Rocket Fuel. I was their vice president, their head of their enterprise division. And basically what we did to optimize ad campaigns is, let's just say, for example, this lip gloss that I have. Okay. So if a consumer goes online and they try to buy this lip gloss, but they abandon their shopping cart, now what are they going to see? All of the ads that they see for the next 30 days are going to be this lip gloss, right? Until they actually purchase that lip gloss. That's the technology that we built, but we didn't build it off of spreadsheets and, you know, and manual optimization. We had to optimize those ads in milliseconds to say, you know, Lindsay O'Keefe didn't buy this lip gloss. We know she really wanted it, but her dog was barking to go out, or she had to go to the bathroom, or whatever the reason was that she abandoned it. The AI didn't really know that, but we had to gather all that big data, because back then it was big data and now it's deep learning. And it was all AI. It's machine learning. So that machine learned that I am a female. It knows all of my previous browsing history, like maybe I was also looking at this lipstick in addition to this lip gloss. And so it can then tell me, or it can basically inform the model, that I didn't actually purchase that lip gloss, but I've looked at other things too. And so it can dynamically pull from a repository of creatives, because I could be looking for other things, like these, you know, reading glasses. I could be looking at this, you know, vacuum thing for my phone when I'm filming my videos. I could be looking at this nice little makeup purse that my daughters use, or this big water cup with my glass straw. There's so many things that I'm shopping for. It uses all of that data to show me the right ad at the right time to get me to purchase one of these, you know, dozen things that I've been looking at. And so what you're saying is that you're basically like gathering all of that data at the same time, and that machine is just learning about you. It's learning about your behaviors. It's learning about your brain waves. It's learning about how your muscles are connecting. It's learning about how you do all of these things. And then that machine, once it has enough data, can start to predict out, okay, well, you know, Lindsay really needs this water cup. Like that. So we're going to show her that ad instead of showing her the lip gloss. It's the same thing in your health. It's just about having enough statistical significance in the data so that it can predict what Lindsay might do in the future or what she might need in order to optimize her health in the future.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, AI, it's a hungry beast, right? It needs data. I've heard, you know, people come up to us at like trade shows and they're like, oh, I'm afraid of AI. Well, it's like AI is just a tool, right? It's like a hammer is a great tool if you want to put a nail in a board, but if you want to cut a board in half, a hammer is not a good tool. It's like a hammer is not inherently good or bad. It's just, how are you using it? And, you know, AI is the same way. And we try and approach it of like, how can we use this in a way that will be most beneficial for humanity? And with brainwaves, it's brainwave data without context is relatively useless, right? If I'm looking at brainwaves and I have no idea what that person's doing or what's going on in their environment, like then that data doesn't really mean anything. And so you need to have context tied to the brainwave data. And so, you know, with chiropractic, it's very easy. We start simply. It's like, hey, you're lying face down with your eyes closed. Like we have a baseline to start with. We have some context. And now let's see what's going on there. And then from that, we can kind of build it out and start to understand, you know, the machine learning can start to, it can start to predict things. It can start to understand more context. So there's so many, obvious, many people, myself included, fully understand how much AI is going to revolutionize the world. It will look so different from the way it does today. As someone who has a tech company who, you know, we're pretty AI heavy, we have to be very mindful. And it's like, it's anything can be weaponized, right? And it's a huge responsibility to ensure that we ensure that does not happen, and we're the stewards of it. And we make sure that it's used for good and that we can help humanity. And that's really what the entire company's built around, right? We want to, you know, I firmly believe that every problem in the world comes back to one thing. It's human beings, but specifically human beings whose brains aren't functioning optimally.
Right?
That's why we fight wars. That's why we become greedy, why we overfish the oceans and cut down the rainforests and, you know, are just shitty to each other, right? Like it's every problem really comes back to that one thing. And if you can solve that one piece of the puzzle at scale, well, you're going to fundamentally transform the world. And that's really the mission behind our company. And, you know, ensuring that we stay focused on that, I think will certainly optimize our chances of success with the AI component helping us and not harming us.
Well, Trevor, I really think you need to level up your goals there. You know, we've talked about completely transforming the health of our planet and then also world peace. So, you know, that's small goals, Trevor, small goals. So where are you right now in development? Is this readily available? Are you raising money? How can the people listening to this?
We basically completed our MVP. We just opened a funding round a couple weeks ago. We've had a ton of interest around the products, so we expect we're going to close the round pretty quick. But if any of the listeners are interested in that, I'm certainly happy to have a conversation around that. And we're expecting, we have a few minor changes to make to the product, and we're bringing in some pretty rock star scientists right now. We're just kind of fleshing out all the details and what that arrangement looks like. But the team is starting to form around us, and we're hoping we'll be doing first deliveries Q1 of next year. Of 2026. So we're pretty close. It's been a 5-year journey now. A lot of ups and downs, a lot of lessons to be learned through the process. But I think we're very, very close now. And we've validated that, you know, this can be done, and we've done it. And now it's just a matter of like, let's optimize it and let's start rolling it out.
That's amazing. And how much will these devices cost?
So as of right now, we're targeting 15,000. Pre-device comes with a computer system as well because it processes a lot of data. So we need a specialized computer with it. And then there's a software subscription component. We're still figuring out exactly what that will be. That's initially for our chiropractic market. And then, you know, we've already had a lot of interest with, as you can imagine, the concussion researchers, concussion practitioners. And there's, you know, quite a few other obvious markets that will enter in the short term, midterm future.
Amazing. Yeah, I think when I first met you, my daughter had just sustained a concussion. And I was thinking, how can I get this on her head? But it wasn't a long concussion. It just was, it was a pretty, I don't even know the terminology anymore. It used to be like mild, medium, and severe. And now they really measure concussions in like the length that it lasts. But anyway, so I can totally see that with concussions. I want to introduce you to my friend, Dr. Annabelle Morgan, who actually just interviewed on this podcast. So I don't know whose interview is going to come out first. But if you haven't listened to that podcast episode, it's an incredible podcast episode. Her son, when he was born, your 9-year-old son, had to have 38% of his brain removed due to chronic seizures. So he was having hundreds of seizures a day as an infant and a newborn. And they finally said, you know, we've pinpointed exactly where the seizures are coming from, kind of like how you mentioned that EEGs are used traditionally. And we need to take out this 38% of his left brain. And they said that he would never really be able to walk or have much memory. He wouldn't be able to move the right side of his brain because left side controls the right side. And he's a fully functioning 9-year-old. After his mom, who is a molecular biologist, created a tincture of amazing medicine that essentially helped heal him. But she's, as a scientist and as a biologist, she's very concerned about how this is going to, how each ingredient and each composition is going to impact the end user of it. So I see a partnership there. She's also doing in Canada some studies with NFL players around brain function. So I think this could be a great first step maybe for you guys. Now, the money that you're raising, I assume, is for more research and more product development.
Yeah, building out our team, just kind of getting, you know, all the things that go along with, you know, we've been deep in the whole product development side of things for 5 years now. Now it's like, okay, now let's turn it into a business, because if you can't make money around it, then the technology dies, and that's not good for anybody. So, yeah, we're very close. I would love to connect with her. I think that would could be some really solid collaboration. Any great mind that, you know, loves the brain and wants to learn more about it, I think, you know, we want those people working with us.
Absolutely. And I can see a bunch of doctors listening to this podcast episode thinking to themselves, well, I want to try it. I want to try it on my patients. So we'll have to make sure that you're getting all of the right people signed up to use Cortex Brain from the outset. So you think sometime in Q1 of 2026?
That's the plan. Yeah, we should start our first deliveries then. So we should start beta testing in the next couple months is the plan.
Incredible. I love it. So everyone should go to cortexbrain.com. Do you have any social media or any other way to contact you?
We do. I've been very deep in the product development side, and we've kind of been stealth mode. So our social media is pretty weak, but we do have an Instagram. I believe it's cortex_brain. But yeah, we're just kind of getting going with the social media side of things.
Okay. Well, they can reach out to you on their website, right? Cortexbrain.com.
Or LinkedIn. I'm a little more active on LinkedIn personally, so I'm easy to reach me through that.
Trevor Colm, COLM. Anything else you want to say to the listeners about how to reach you or how to engage with you or what's coming next for Cortex Brain?
Reach out through LinkedIn is probably the easiest way to reach me. Anyone who's interested in collaborating, you know, we really believe that this is a technology for the people. And if we can, you know, we need to have lots of great minds, lots of different perspectives, a part of it. You know, AI can get biased very easily. And I think the more great minds we can bring to the table, the more perspectives, the more we can ensure the success of it, that, you know, we don't end up with that bias and we really do move the needle and improve the health and well-being of humanity.
Well, thank you, Trevor. I am very excited for all the things that you're doing for Cortex Brain to really have a massive impact on our world, on our communities. And I just feel so blessed to have met you and have you share all the incredible things that you're doing here on the Optimize We podcast. So thank you so much for your time and for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.